Hello, this is Pat, broadcasting from the Audible Local Ledger, an affiliate station of the Massachusetts Radio Reading Service. I'll be reading from the Friday, December 8th, 2017 edition of the Mashpee Enterprise. Our first article is Mashpee Commons Gives Community Planners a Blank Slate. Mashpee Commons concluded the first phase of its public outreach campaign this week as it looks for the public's input in shaping its future. Architects and planners with the town's major shopping center hosted a workshop Saturday morning at Mashpee Public Library, as well as at a similar workshop during the Mashpee Planning Board's meeting on Wednesday. Both were well attended. Arnold B. Chase, Jr., Managing General Partner of Mashpee Commons, announced intentions at the end of the summer to involve the public to help shape the village's future. The staff of the Commons has hosted the workshops, what they have called Mashpee Commons by Design, Building Mashpee's Future Together, to engage the Mashpee community in conceptualizing the next phase of the shopping center and to facilitate the process of designing a mixed-use neighborhood. I think it's great having an open forum about this, longtime Mashpee resident Irene C. Chekovich said as she waited for the library doors to open before the meeting on Saturday. Since we've moved here, I've been concerned about the town being overdeveloped, but I think they've done a good job in that regard, she said. As they entered the library, workshop participants were given packets of green and red stickers, as well as a survey to be filled out and left for facilitators at the end of the morning. Taped along the back wall and laid out onto tables at the back of the room were more than 60 photographs of urban and village centers and neighborhoods from around the country, including photographs of village greens, walking trails, and ponds. In an activity called Visual Preference Survey, participants were asked to look at each photograph and place a green sticker for yes, I would like to see something like this at Mashpee Commons, or a red for no, I would not like to see this. Beneath the photos were space for written comments. All the pages with stickers and comments would be scanned after the workshop and put on the Mashpee Commons by Design website, mashpeecommons.com/future. Pages with all green stickers or all red stickers would be easy to catalog. Pages with some of one color and some of the other would show where more discussion needed to happen. The area of focus was for the undeveloped part of the Commons property that is mostly wooded area now. Mashpee Commons owns 260 acres in the area, only 60 of which are currently developed. The focus is on the area outside the developed area at the Commons, Mr. Chase said. It's about civic life, what happens between the buildings and how to support that, he said. Knowing what people want informs what kinds of buildings we will build. The planning process, Mr. Chase reiterated several times in his opening remarks, is to be community-based with dialogue and discussion every step of the way. Mr. Chase used the term urbanism in reference to the current trend in housing, which is a moving away from a single-family houses that stand alone in favor of residential living built around a town center. Urbanism does not mean building a city, he said. It is about the way buildings relate to the street and the environment around them. Mashpee Commons, he said, reflects urbanism. The streets and sidewalks are a certain width and buildings are not taller than a certain height, giving historical New England look. Mr. Chase explained that currently, both younger people and older people are seeking smaller houses or apartment living, either for affordability or in order to downsize. Housing built in Mashpee Commons is, and will continue to be, focused on smaller lots and apartments, with some single-family housing or cottages as well as cottage courts, he said. Authentic places need a lot of minds to make them happen, architect and urban planner Russell Preston said. He also talked about placemaking, an activity like this project that is used around the country to help support local economies. Mr. Preston went over the survey questions, which asked public preference for how to design civic space, housing, open space, and street connections, such as bicycle and walking routes, to and from the Commons. We know there is a need for housing, Mr. Preston said. Most housing on the Cape is single family. How can we build a wonderful neighborhood together, he asked. How can Mashpee Commons help the Cape's environmental issues? How do we continue to improve the economy? Expansion should bring in new business, but also protect the old, he said. And how will decisions about Mashpee Commons affect the surrounding communities? Workshop participants moved from sitting as an audience to sitting in groups around long tables to share ideas. A large map of Mashpee, with the Mashpee Commons developed and undeveloped property outlined, covered each table, and pens, paper, and markers were provided so that ideas could be drawn in or written down. At the end of the exercise, one spokesman from each table presented that group's ideas to everyone as the Mashpee Commons by Design team took notes. Suggestions for what people would like to see in the future of Mashpee Commons included taking traffic away from the commercial area, underground parking with gardens on top was suggested, more walkways, bike paths, and running paths, cross-country skiing paths in winter, keeping some open space, community garden areas for public art, improving the walking path to Deer Crossing, truly affordable housing, blended within the village, a hotel, resort, and/or conference center, places to go other than for shopping, a trout pond, an outdoor center, a tech center, a ball field, a playground, and hop-on, hop-off shuttle buses around the commons and to and from area neighborhoods. Moving the post office was enthusiastically endorsed by some, but not all. Much discussion revolved around vehicle traffic and clearing the logjam at the Mashpee Rotary. Mashpee Town Planner F. Thomas Fudala on Wednesday suggested that an underpass beneath the rotary be constructed to allow traffic to pass more easily north on Route 151. An expansion of Mashpee Commons to incorporate the unused land around it has long been envisioned, but planners said they are at a crossroads because of Mashpee's current zoning regulations. At issue is State Statute Chapter 40B, which enables local zoning boards of appeal to approve affordable housing developments under flexible rules if at least 20 to 25% of the units have long-term affordability restrictions. Housing at the Market Street Extension in Mashpee Commons was built using 40B, and Mr. Chase said they now know that it is very hard to use. We need a new plan moving forward, he said. This is an evolving conversation, and we look forward to continuing the discussion and sharing more ideas at the upcoming workshops, Mr. Chase said in a press release. A charrette is tentatively planned for spring 2018. Mashpee Commons by Design can be followed on Facebook and at www.mashpeecommons.com/future. Plastic bag ban coming to Mashpee. Mashpee's plastic bag ban will go into effect at the beginning of the new year. The change will be easy for some stores that have stopped using plastic, whether out of respect for the environment or because chain grocery stores in other towns have already ceased to use such bags. The organic market in Mashpee Commons has stopped using plastic bags, said a manager at the store. Roche Brothers in South Cape Village typically now hands out paper bags instead of plastic already. Shoppers who bring their own reusable bags to the store are offered a 5-cent rebate per bag, which they may choose to donate to the Fisher House program that provides housing and assistance to veterans through an agency in Boston. The ban in Mashpee passed a town meeting in October last year. The authors of the article, the Mashpee Environmental Oversight Committee, argued that plastic bags contribute to injury and the death of marine and terrestrial animals, pollute coastal and terrestrial environments, clog storm drains, burden and waste collection and recycling machines, and require millions of barrels of fossil fuels and manufacturing. A motion was made and approved at town meeting floor to decrease the thickness of the ban from 4 mil to 1.5 mil. The common handled bag given out the grocery stores are typically 0.5 mil. A representative from Stop and Shop in Mashpee Commons did not return a call for comment. In Falmouth, where the town recently adopted a similar ban, A Stop and Shop provides a thicker plastic bag for 10 cents, and paper bags are still free at the store. Mashpee Police Department and the Mashpee Health Department will enforce the bylaw. The first offense of the bylaw results in $50, followed by $100 for subsequent violations and $200 for a third. The town may, by bylaw states, publish the fine on its website after the third and subsequent offenses. Affordable housing activity picks up in Mashpee. Mashpee has had a flurry of activity for affordable housing in the last few months of the year. Habitat for Humanity Cape Cod has applied for $167,000 in Community Preservation Act funds to build three homes in Mashpee, two on Great Neck Road North and one on DeGrasse Road. The Mashpee Affordable Housing Committee has reviewed two proposals for 40B projects, one on Main Street near Town Hall and one on Cotuit Road. And the committee has looked to put out a request for proposals to develop 950 Falmouth Road, an area that could potentially bring up to 50 residential and affordable dwellings. Horsley Witten Group, a firm from Sandwich, plans to release a draft version of a feasibility study of the project before Christmas. The projects, however, are far from fruition. If a potential developer accepts the request for proposal for the Falmouth Road development, the committee learned Tuesday it could be another 4 years before shovels get into the ground. Laura Schufelt, Assistant Director of Community Assistance with the Massachusetts Housing Partnership, provided the committee a lesson on drafting requests for proposals and said that a similar project in Brewster will likely take 4 years from the release of an RFP. Two of the homes Habitat has proposed will need a variance from the Mashpee Zoning Board of Appeals. Habitat applied in November for funds to purchase land and construct two three-bedroom homes on, at 341 Great Neck Road North and a three-bedroom home on 50 DeGrasse Road. Both plans propose developing ranch-style homes with the farmer's porch. The developer of the Aquay Highlands subdivision on Blue Castle Drive provided Habitat the parcel on DeGrasse Road. The planning board, when it approved a project in 2014, required that one lot in the cluster subdivision be donated for affordable housing. Developer Matthew Haney provided the lot to Habitat this spring. The zoning board will need to approve a variance for the two homes Habitat hopes to build at 341 Great Neck Road North. Without a variance, the one-acre site does not conform to the zoning bylaw and is unbuildable. The property is in a R5 zone, which requires 80,000 square feet of land to build. The current owner, Leonard Mendez, applied for a variance, but the board denied the request in May of last year. In its application for funds in the CPC, Habitat states that it has a purchase and sales agreement with an owner's of for $17,000, an amount based on appraisal based on an appraisal based on the lot being unbuildable. Habitat would make all three homes available at prices affordable to homeowners earning 65% of the area meaning income or less, the application states. The Affordable Housing Committee has written a letter in support of the three Habitat projects. The committee has also voted to support two proposed 40B projects. Charles P. Tuttle of Southside Realty Trust brought a proposal for 8 units on Main Street to the committee in October. The project was originally proposed in 2006, but stalled, like many projects at the time, because of the recession of 2008. Two of the 8 units would be affordable. The need for the affordable units is clear, and the project would provide a substantial benefit to the Mashpee community, states a memo from Committee Chairman Alan B. Isbitz to the Mashpee Board of Selectmen. Selectmen at a meeting in November noted a letter from the committee but did not choose to endorse the project and tabled it for a later date. The board did not discuss why they did not support the project. Assistant Town Manager Wayne E. Taylor said Tuesday that the project would need approval from the zoning board. Domingo Pina, a Falmouth developer, has looked at developing an 8-unit affordable housing project on Cotuit Road. The Affordable Housing Committee has endorsed this project as well. Meanwhile, Mashpee Commons has received permits for nearly 100 affordable units, although the future of that plan is currently unclear. Architects and planners with Mashpee Commons are in the midst of a campaign that seeks input from the public for future development and have discussed abandoning the Chapter 40B plans. Chapter 40B allows for denser development than the zoning bylaw allows, with the condition that 25% of the residential units be set aside as affordable. Mashpee Commons currently has an approved and permitted Chapter 40B plan that calls for 382 units of housing project on 60.7 acres. 96 of the units would be affordable. If the developers abandon the 40B proposal, it's unclear how many affordable units they would provide in the expansion. Any project within the scope would trigger Cape Cod Commission development thresholds that would mandate that at least 10% of the residential units be reserved as affordable. Ms. Isbitz has said Tuesday the committee should not give up on the commons and to try to convince the developers to provide more affordable housing. While the Commons seems to be committed to providing some affordable housing in their expansion plans, Mr. Isbitz is concerned that it would be less than previously proposed. Three-peat for the Falcons. Mashpee loves its Falcons, and it's hard not to like a team that has won 3 Super Bowls in a row. Following the Mashpee High School football team's 22-16 Super Bowl win over Blackstone Valley Tech, everybody, restaurant owners, the Mashpee Police Department, Mashpee Pops, the school administration, has been talking about the team and the big victory. They're a fun team to root for, said Detective Brett A. Calhoun of the Mashpee Police Department. Detective Calhoun, along with a group of other police officers, volunteered his time to lead the team to and from Gillette Stadium with a police escort on Saturday, as well as taking in the game from the sidelines. For a day, they thought they were an NFL, and that's what we were trying to do, the detective said. The Cruisers led the entourage into Mashpee after the game with their lights on. The Mashpee Pops, following the weekend's excitement, provided the team with a substantial donation for the players' rings. The past 2 years, the group has donated $1,000. This year, they gave $10,000. We figured for a third year in a row, that's extraordinary, said Mashpee Pops member James Ficarro. The Pops presented a check to the team yesterday at the Mashpee TV headquarters. Estimates for the number of fans in white and blue that made it out to the Patriots' home stadium for the game range in the thousands. For those who did not, living rooms, including the town manager's, were aglow with the game on TV. And chances are, if you were inside a restaurant or bar in Mashpee with a TV, the game was on when the Falcons' sophomore linebacker Kendall Rose picked off an errant pass from Blackstone Valley to cap the game, cheers booming. Dino's Sports Bar had the game on the big screen, although the bar's owner, Constantinos Mitoukostas, was at Gillette. It got a little cold at the end, but it doesn't feel as bad when you win, Mr. Mitoukostas said. Head coach of the football team, Matt Traveri, along with a team of other coaches, group of other coaches, brought the trophies through Dino's for a victory lap after the game, as well as to Bobby Burns. There aren't two places we would rather go, Mr. Traveri said. These guys have been so supportive of us. It's a warm welcome. The lap has become a bit of a tradition in the last 3 years to show the team's appreciation for the community. Mr. Traveri said that the Super Bowl experience is a once-in-a-lifetime one for his players, especially for those who have played at Gillette for the third year. The rest of their lives, they'll talk about this, the coach said. After getting married and having kids, this will probably be number 3. Patricia Peters, a manager at Bobby Burns, was too busy to work at work Saturday to take in the game, but said a big group of fans came in to watch at the bar. She recorded the game at home and watched it later. But the manager said that Bobby Burns has a special connection with the team. Currently, three players work at the Mashpee restaurant, and the restaurant proudly displays Deshaun Diaz's helmet behind the bar. They're really, really great kids, Mrs. Peters said, and it's not easy to find kids that work well, but they are impressive and stand out. The school administration has not been silent about the team either. Superintendent Patricia M. DeBoer took to social media Saturday to say how proud she was of the students. So proud of our state champions, hashtag Mashpee football players and coaches, our cheerleaders, our band, and our hashtag Mashpee community of supporters, she wrote on Twitter. It's great to be in Mashpee, a connected community. The football team will display this year's trophy during the Mashpee Christmas Parade tomorrow. The parade kicks off at 5:30 p.m., starting at Deer Crossing and culminating at Mashpee Commons. That would have been on Saturday. County Assembly meeting during nearly derailed during public comment. Raised voices in support of a proposed amendment nearly cut short a meeting Wednesday afternoon at the Barnstable County Assembly of Delegates at the County Complex in Barnstable. The speaker for the 15-member legislative board, Suzanne McAuliffe of Yarmouth, called to adjourn the meeting during the public comment period on a proposal to allow the Barnstable County Sheriff's Office to enforce federal immigration laws with individuals incarcerated at the Barnstable County Correctional Facility in Bourne. Ms. McAuliffe said that Delegate Brian O'Malley of Provincetown had hijacked the meeting along with more than two dozen supporters of his proposed resolution that opposes a partnership between the Barnstable County Sheriff's Office and the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, or ICE. Mr. O'Malley said he presented the resolution, which he called an official opinion, to allow community members to participate in conversations about the issue, even though the Assembly holds no authority over the functions of the Sheriff's Office. ICE is now considering whether it will allow the Sheriff's Office to access the immigration status of individuals incarcerated at the county correctional facility. After federal officials approached his office in February, Sheriff James M. Cummings submitted an application for the ICE 287G program, which enables the state or local law enforcement agency to become a delegated immigration enforcement authority within its jurisdiction. Sheriff Cummings and his staff were not present at Wednesday's assembly meeting. If the application is approved, Barnstable County correctional officers would be given direct access to search ICE databases to determine if prisoners being held at the county correctional facility on or without bail are in the country illegally and should be detained. If the prisoners are found to be undocumented, the county could begin an immigration hearing process, which could lead to deportation. During the meeting, Mr. O'Malley said he somewhat resented the speaker's implication the agenda had been hijacked by his actions. He said he presented the resolution 3 weeks ago, and word of mouth brought supporters to Wednesday's meeting. Among the more than 25 supporters of Mr. O'Malley's proposal were many from the Cape Cod Coalition for Safe Communities. Some wore buttons that said Equal Justice for Immigrants. At the start of the public comment period, Ms. McAuliffe said each person would be allowed 1.5 minutes to address the assembly. When former Dennis Selectman Wayne Bergeron, the second speaker, exceeded that time, he and Ms. McAuliffe started to argue, and several supporters objected loudly. Mr. Bergeron asked to be given as much time to address the assembly as the first speaker, Leo G. Kahunas, who was chairman of the Barnstable County Board of Regional Commissioners. During a meeting earlier this month, the county commissioners voted unanimously to send a letter of support endorsing the sheriff's application to take part in ICE 280CV program, Mr. Kukuda said. Responding to the supporters' objections, Ms. McAuliffe banged her gavel multiple times and said the meeting was adjourned. Some attendees shouted coward and shame as she left the meeting room. A few minutes later, she returned and re-adjourned the meeting. Later in the meeting, the assembly made a motion to continue discussion on the matter and possibly to vote on Mr. O'Malley's resolution on January 3rd. Mr. Sheriff Cummings is scheduled to address the assembly during that meeting. Mashpee Police investigating missing man, state police arrest son. Police announced Wednesday they are investigating the disappearance of 64-year-old Mashpee resident Raymond M. Perry. Mashpee Police Chief of Police Scott W. Carline stated in a release that last Friday the department received a report of a missing person who had not been seen or heard from in several days. The department initiated an investigation into Mr. Perry's whereabouts. Mr. Perry lives on Riverside Road. As a result of that initial investigation and information gathered to date, I have requested the assistance of the Cape and Islands District Attorney's Office, as well as the Massachusetts State Police Detective Unit, the release stated. This is an active and ongoing joint investigation, looking into all possible aspects of Mr. Perry's disappearance. Anyone with information regarding this investigation is encouraged to contact the Mashpee Police Department Detective Bureau at 508-539-1484. Cape and Islands District Attorney's Office spokesman Tara L. Miltimore declined to comment on the investigation. Massachusetts State Police could not be reached for comment. According to a court report from Plymouth District Court, Massachusetts State Police arrested Mr. Perry's son, Eli J. Perry, 37 Riverside Drive, on Route 3 in Plymouth on Tuesday night. Eli Perry was arraigned Wednesday and charged with carrying a firearm without a license, operating a motor vehicle with a suspended license and a number plate violation to conceal identity. He is being held on $20,000 bond or $2,000 cash bail, according to court documents. A pretrial hearing is set for January 3rd at Plymouth District Court. Eli Perry has had multiple court appearances at Falmouth District Court in the past 3 years. Last month, he was charged with malicious destruction of property of a value less than $250, two counts of vandalism, attempting to commit a crime, and violating a protective order on June 28th in Sandwich. He was ordered to pay restitution for the first charge, and the other charges were dismissed. In July, Mashpee Police Officers, along with Barnstable County Sheriff's Deputies and the Mashpee Harbor Master, chased Eli Perry on land and water before arresting him on multiple warrants for drug and motor vehicle-related offenses. Before police could apprehend him, Mr. Perry jumped into the water and swam to nearby Monomoskoy Island, police said. The search included an officer with a canine from the sheriff's office and Mashpee Harbor Master Alec J. Turner, who was at the scene, police said, in case the suspect entered the water again. Mashpee police did not comment on whether there is a connection between the disappearance of Raymond Perry and his son's arrest. On Wednesday, Raymond Perry's niece, Heidi Mae Peterson of Leicester, said in a Facebook message that her uncle Ray Ray grew up with her father Dan Perry of Nevada on Secaucet Island in Mashpee. The two brothers, she said, had traveled together in California and Nevada earlier this month. My uncle is in contact with us daily, if not weekly, she said. My father is his closest family member. Thanksgiving was the last day my adult children and teen children and I spoke with Uncle Ray Ray. I saw him post on the 26th of November. He is active daily on Facebook. He is never out of contact. He would never let people worry about him. Just a reminder, this is Pat reading from the Friday, December 8th, 2017 edition of the Mashpee Enterprise, and I'm at the halfway point of this broadcast. We have one obituary listing this week. William Patrick Murphy. William Patrick Murphy, 89, of Chatham, died December 4th. He leaves a daughter in Mashpee. Mr. Murphy served in the U.S. Navy during World War II and was a plank owner of the USS Hammer. In addition to his wife, he leaves his children and their spouses, Kevin Murphy and Kathleen of Plymouth, Kenneth Murphy of Weymouth, and Karen Tosini and Peter of Mashpee, 9 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and extended family. A funeral mass was celebrated Thursday at Parish of Christ the Church in Mashpee. Burial with military honors was at the Massachusetts National Cemetery in Bourne. School Business Administrator Keeps District on Track. This is a very long article. I will read part of it. If I have time at the end, I'll read more of it. A public school district, even a relatively small one such as Mashpee's, requires a sophisticated financial and operational system to ensure that students and teachers have the tools and resources they need for a successful educational experience. At the center of the Mashpee School District's financial and operational system is Business Administrator Paul A. Funk, a Harwich resident who has worked in education for more than 40 years. During an interview in his office in the superintendent's suite at Quashnut Elementary School last Thursday, Mr. Funk said he has worked with the district since 2006 when former superintendent Ann M. Bradshaw brought him in briefly as a consultant before hiring him a personal business administrator. I came back to Mashpee in 2009 and filled in again for a few months, and then she hired another business administrator and I left again, he said. At that time, I was doing short-term consulting in several other districts, including Wilmington, Melrose, Franklin, and my hometown of Wakefield. On the Cape, Mr. Funk has consulted for the Cape Cod Collaborative in Osterville and for Barnstable and Sandwich School Districts. Also, when Harwich and Chatham were looking to evaluate whether to regionalize, I did the first numbers in the regionalization. He said I was also on the building committee for Monomoy Regional High School in Harwich. In 2011, shortly after his wife died of an illness, Miss Bradshaw asked him to return to work in Mashpee, Mr. Funk said. At that point, and Bradshaw said, I'm staying only one more year. Would you mind staying? And I said, yes, he said. Then former Superintendent Brian Hyde came in 2013, and I decided to stay working for him 2 days a week. Mr. Funk said his son, who is also named Paul Funk, and is a teacher and head football coach at Dennis Yarmouth Regional High School, received his graduate degree at Salem State University at the same time Mr. Hyde was a graduate student there. When current Superintendent Patricia M. DeBoer became interim superintendent after Mr. Hyde left the district last year, she asked Mr. Funk to stay on. I usually work 2 days a week, Tuesday and Thursday, and I come in on Wednesdays when there are school committee meetings, he said. Before becoming an administrator, Mr. Funk taught accounting and business subjects at Winthrop High School for 22 years. He was also an adjunct professor in management and finance at Quincy College in Quincy and Anna Maria College in Paxton. Mr. Funk said he was not looking to get into consulting after he retired from Sudbury Public Schools. I was only retired a month and I started getting calls, he said. Working in Mashpee is the longest I have been in a school district. Today, he works closely with Ms. DeBoer and Assistant Superintendent Hope P. Hanscom, as well as Mashpee's 3 school principals. He oversees a staff of 5 people. Payroll and personnel, which is Ellen DeMello, Darlene Phelan, accounts payable, Jody Gallagher, payroll and personnel, Kathy Loico, Administrative Assistant, and Gail Hannon, Executive Administrative Assistant to the Superintendent. The staff is the funniest I've ever worked with, Mr. Funk said. The team's responsibilities include payroll, accounts payable, food service, transportation, revolving accounts, grants, negotiation with the district's 3 bargaining units, and budget preparation. I have to do the state financial reports, which determine the per-pupil expenditures, and those particular financial reports now by law have to be audited. Each annual budget starts with the teachers and the principals who bring their budget plans to Mr. Funk. Together, we determine where the funds might come from to help fund what they need to run their schools, he said. From that point, it goes to the superintendent and then to the school committee. Then it goes to the town manager, who will make his recommendation to the finance committee and the appropriate body, the Board of Selectmen. That budget, he said, then goes to a vote by the people of Mashpee in the May town meeting. In Massachusetts, town and cities have to come in with a balanced budget. They can't run a deficit budget, he said. In other words, they can't say, I'll run this budget in a deficit this year, and then I'll make it up next year. This is what I can do to afford to give you, and that we'll do our best to work with that, is how we approach it, he said. Okay. Memorial service. In conjunction with a designated national prayer vigil against gun violence, Cape Cod Grandmothers Against Gun Violence is sponsoring a memorial service commemorating the fifth anniversary of the Sandy Hook school shootings in Newtown Connection, where 20 first graders and 6 staff members were murdered in 2012. The candlelight vigil will take place Thursday at 7 p.m. in the First Baptist Church, 486 Main Street. All are invited to join in an hour of music and reflection as the name of each victim is read. Musicians will include the Reverend Jonathan Singer, Dinah Mellon, and Alan McGarry. Guest speakers will include the Reverend Kate Epperly, a United Church of Christ minister serving Christian Union Church in Truro, and the coordinator of the Cape Cod chapter of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, Margie Mahart, representative Moms of Cape Cod, and Mike Jackman, district director for the U.S. Representative Bill Keating, Democratic of Massachusetts. Mr. Jackman has a special connection to the Sandy Hook tragedy, where his sister-in-law was a teacher's assistant at the school and was in the building the day of the shooting. His nieces and nephews all attended the school. Human Rights Commission recognizes Upper Cape residents. The Barnstable County Human Rights Commission announced the recipients of the 2017 Rosenthal and Cornerstone Awards earlier this week in a statement from the Commission's Vice Chairman, Ellen R. Milstead Bourne. The awards will be given at the Commission as the Commission celebrates International Human Rights Day at its annual breakfast tomorrow at Hyannis Golf Club. That would have been Saturday. The Rosenthal Community Champion Award, named after Irving Leopold Rosenthal, who served as Barnstable County Sheriff from 1922 to 1933, is given to those in the public sector who are recognized by their peers, community, and associates as individuals who have fostered and supported human rights concepts and ideals, especially those who have worked to advance human rights and to eliminate discrimination. This year's recipients include a pair of teams from the town of Barnstable, Barnstable Police Department Community Impact Unit, and Department of Public Works Homeless Camp Cleanup Crews. These two teams work together in a true attempt to break the cycle of homelessness and secure the connection to much-needed services for an incredibly vulnerable population, Mr. Milstead said. The remarkable compassion and efforts put forth over the past several years has evolved into an endeavor resulting in the reduction of numbers of camps overall. The strides that have been made reflect the team's intent to make sure all people realize they do matter. Also receiving the Rosenthal Award is State Senator Julian A. Sear, Democrat of Truro, whose district includes Mashpee. Recognizing that the LGBTQ community, specifically the younger generation, had no avenue for a voice on Beacon Hill, Senator Sear formed and developed the Massachusetts Commission on LGBTQ for Youth, Mr. Milstead said. This is an independent state agency that recommends policies about programs for this population to ensure the depth of their issues, especially discrimination, can be heard and addressed at the state level. The Cornerstone Award is given to individuals recognized by their peers, community, and associates as those who have fostered and supported human rights concepts and ideals. One of this year's recipients is Penelope Duby of Falmouth, the chairman of the Cape Cod and Islands Commission on the Status of Women and a founding member of the Cape Women's Coalition and other organizations, including Cape Cod Women for Change. She is a true champion for women and those disadvantaged here on Cape Cod, Mr. Milstead said. Her resilience and tenacity make her a tireless defender for all ages of the female population. The other recipient is James D. Hurley of Sandwich, the founder of the Cape Cod Collaborative Arts Network in 2012. Jim provides opportunities for access, inclusion, and active participation in the literary, visual, and performing arts for people with disabilities on Cape Cod, Mr. Milstead said. The programs that have evolved in Cape Cod CAN bring together people with a wide range of disabilities, both individuals and from organizations, under the tutelage of professional artists. Retirement has not stopped Jim. It's only strengthened his determination. I'll read you the police logs next. Thursday, November 30th, 1:30 a.m. While on patrol on Route 28, Officer Benjamin Tomash stopped Dana Jackson, 45 of Hyannis, and arrested her on a warrant from Wareham District Court for operating a motor vehicle with a revoked license as a habitual traffic offender. At 5:25 p.m., Officer Christopher Svelkeld stopped Ryan W. Buckley, 31 of Mashpee, on Route 28, and arrested him on a warrant from Falmouth District Court for assault and battery. Saturday, December 2nd. While on patrol on Route 28, Officer John Haggerty stopped Michael J. Catania, 35 of Mashpee, and cited him for operating a motor vehicle with a suspended license. 2:25 a.m., police responded to a motor vehicle crash near the intersection of Meeting House Road and Asher's Path. Officer John McDonough arrested David R. Donahue, 22, of Forestdale, for operating under the influence of liquor, negligent operation of a motor vehicle, and failure to stop at a stop sign. Police said the vehicle crashed into a parked vehicle and a fence. There were no injuries. 4:31 p.m., Christopher Guka stopped Sean E. Burns, 31 of Attleboro, at the intersection of Old Barnstable Road and Southport Drive, and arrested him for operating a motor vehicle with a suspended license. 8:49 p.m., police responded to a two-car crash at the Mashpee Rotary. Officer Christopher Guka arrested Caitlin V. Crowley, 25 of Sandwich, for operating under the influence of liquor and negligent operation of a motor vehicle. No one was injured. Mashpee Commons features Falcon's Nest Annex in December. Mashpee Middle High School students in a marketing and entrepreneurship class were looking for a way to revitalize and looking and expand the school's student-run store, the Falcon's Nest. Enter Mashpee Commons, which offered the school a vacant space to serve as a store that is open to the community for the month of December. The Falcon's Nest Annex is now open Sunday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at 10 North Street, next door to Seabags in Mashpee Commons, through the last day of the month. The Annex sells many hashtag made in Mashpee themed products, including school t-shirts, sweatshirts, pajamas, hats, mats, mugs, ornaments, and water bottles. It also sells 3D printed pieces created by students and other student artworks. My marketing and entrepreneurship students created a business plan, conducted surveys with students and parents, and developed a product line. Michael P. Looney, Career and Technical Education Department Coordinator for the Public School, Mashpee Public Schools, said in an interview at the school Tuesday. All proceeds go back to the Career and Technical Education Program for additional product development and support of students, he said. Last month, Mr. Looney met with Mary L. Durr, Marketing Director for Mashpee Commons, and they talked about ways to revitalize the store. Ms. Durr offered the school a vacant space at the Commons. It came up in conversation, and I just thought about a perfect fit and the perfect use of this vacant space, Ms. Durr said in a call Tuesday. It's a smaller space, just right for a pop-up shop to sample merchandise and provide good career-building opportunities. To staff the store and cover all shifts, Mr. Looney said it takes a lot of volunteer coordination with the larger Mashpee community, and that help is multi-generational. The Falcon Friends at Southport, a volunteer group that works with the school, are taking shifts, he said, as well as students from the school's transition program. That's for special needs students transitioning into adulthood. Later this month, the parent-teacher organizations of Kenneth C. Coombs School and Quashnet Elementary School will share the space and feature products that appeal to younger age students, he said. Also, the school printed 200 stadium t-shirts celebrating the Mashpee High School Falcons football team's third consecutive Super Bowl win. Proceeds will support the Falcon Family Fund for those in need during the holidays, Mr. Looney said. While the store idea came together quickly and is still a work in progress, Mr. Looney said he would like to have students manage all aspects of the store, from accounting to marketing to product development. The goal is to give students interested in business management and marketing an authentic, real-world learning experience with the store, he said. It's an opportunity for the students to connect with the community and to share the work they are doing. That's the culture of our school. Being able to do, to create, to build, to engineer. This is really a culminating experience for the students. That's why this opportunity at Mashpee Commons is so great. It brings so much together. On Saturday, Mr. said, the Falcon football team and marching band will take part in the Mashpee Chamber Christmas Parade that moves to the Commons. I'm sure that demand will be high for Falcon swag after the Super Bowl win, she said. We'll be promoting the Falcon's Nest Annex on social media and building in cross-promotion. We might explore this on a longer-term basis, depending upon space and if the school has the capacity in terms of staffing to keep it going. By Larkin, Angel Tree puts Southport in the Christmas spirit. The Christmas spirit was alive and well Saturday night in the grand ballroom at Southport. About 100 revelers in red sweaters took in dinner, merriment, and entertainment and good cheer amidst a large pile of presents. The stage in the ballroom was lined with piles of different shapes and sizes of brightly colored packages, about 300 of them. When I walked in, I almost cried. I still got chills, said Rosemarie Palazzolo about the sight of the stacked gifts. Miss Palazzolo has organized the By Larkin Angel Tree in Southport for the last 5 years. It's all about the kids, she said. For the last 18 years, Southport residents have received Christmas wishes from anonymous children in the community. The wishes are placed on a Christmas tree, written on paper angels. The identities of the children are protected, but each angel has the age and gender of the child and what they want for the holiday. Southport residents can select an angel from the tree and then get to shopping. Within a week of this year's tradition, 70 angels have been placed and promptly plucked from the tree, Miss Palazzolo said. By Saturday, the tradition brought in presents for 310 children, including children from needy families at the Quashnet Elementary School, children at Safe Harbor in Hyannis, a home for women suffering from domestic abuse, and children with mothers in Emerson House, a transitional home in Falmouth for women suffering from mental health and substance abuse disorders. As part of each year's event, the committee organizing the Angel Tree also hosts a night of celebration in December when the shoppers come together. About 100 gathered Saturday to have dinner and be entertained by singer Jimmy Maz, performing in front of the wall of gifts. By Larkin, a longtime Southport resident, started the tradition in 1998, explained Miss Palazzolo. It started as a way to collect winter coats for families in need, but through her involvement with Citizens Police Academy in Mashpee, she met Dory Dottridge, a human services liaison. The two connected with the Mashpee schools, and the Angel Tree began to take root. As the tradition began to grow, Emerson House was added. In 2012, the event started collecting presents for children at Safe Harbor as well. But that same year, Vi Larkin passed away, leaving a hole not only in the Angel Tree tradition, but in Southport. Those gathered Saturday night for dinner remembered Miss Larkin as a quiet but busy and dignified woman. When she put her mind to something, she did it, Miss Palazzolo said. I admired her. With the threat of the tradition ending, Miss Palazzolo stepped in. She said she could not stand to see it go. And while it took some time for her to learn the ropes, she said she's gotten it down to a science now. Over 18 years, Miss Palazzolo said, they have been given 5,635 gifts. In 2012, the tradition was renamed the Vi Larkin Angel Tree. Edward H. Larkin, Vi Larkin's husband, was there Saturday and said he is glad to see the tradition continue in his wife's name. Mr. Larkin attributed a lot of success it has had to the fact that Southport women love to shop and the tradition gives them an excuse. He said the dinner had been the biggest social function of the year at Southport when 300 people would line up at the door. While the dinner is not as rambunctious as it used to be, the gifts keep on coming. It's amazing the number of gifts that pile up on the stage. It has just grown tremendously. This affects the part of Mashpee that really needs it. Housing Assistance Corporation to hold telethon. Housing Assistance Corporation, HAC, Shelter Cape Cod Telethon, now in its 14th year, will raise awareness toward the housing challenges facing the region and raise funds to help local individuals and families who are homeless or struggling on Cape Cod. The event, which will take place Thursday from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Cape Cod Community Media Center, will air live on local cable access channels 98 and 99 and be streamed live at www.capemedia.org. Over the course of 4 hours, viewers will have an opportunity to not only learn what the housing work HAC is doing, but how other agencies and organizations are making a positive impact on Cape Cod and the islands. Guests will include Jay Coburn, CEO Community Development Partnership in Eastham, J.R. Mell, Regional Director of Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Cape Cod and the Islands, Heidi Nelson, CEO of Duffy Health Center, and Regina Giambuso, Executive Director of the Cape and Islands Veterans Outreach Center. The night will also feature several holiday-themed performances from children's choirs and musicians on Cape Cod. Matt Pitta, News Director at Cape Cod Broadcasting, and Mindy Todd, host and producer of The Point on WCAI, will serve as co-hosts of this year's telethon. HAC is seeking volunteers to serve as phone fundraisers the night of the telethon. Fundraisers will spend a half hour training and a minimum of a half hour on the phones, calling friends and families to raise funds in support of HAC's mission to ensure all on Cape Cod and the islands have access to safe, stable, decent housing. Residents interested in volunteering can register at www.ShelterCapeCodTelethon.org or by contacting HAC Volunteer Coordinator Mary Everett Patrickon at volunteer@CapeCod.org or at 508-771-5400, extension 279. Businesses or individuals looking to sponsor the telethon can contact HAC Event Coordinator Deanna Boussier at dboussier@haconcapecod.org or at 508-771-5400, extension 270. Library receives grant for programming. Mashpee Public Library was recently awarded a Library Services and Technology Act grant for $7,500 from the Massachusetts Board of Library Commissioners. Mashpee Public Library is embarking on a year-long project titled Science is Everywhere to expose children and their families to exciting, thought-provoking, and meaningful hands-on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, which is called STEM programming, the statement said. We will be offering many STEM programs for families as well as monthly hands-on workshops for students of grades 3 to 6, Youth Services Librarian Janet Burke said. By offering these programs for families and children, the library hopes to increase science content knowledge, increase an interest in science, and increase the attitude that science is fun. The library plans to collaborate with other Mashpee Town departments and community groups to provide programming for families that is relevant to local issues. The Mashpee Conservation Department will explain the Mashpee Herring Count Project and local nature trails. The Mashpee Department of Natural Resources is planning to educate families about local shellfish, and the Water District plans to describe water conservation and clean water initiatives in Mashpee. The Mashpee Garden Club will provide programs on herb gardens, gardening, and nutrition, and bees in the food chain. In addition, the library will create a new makerspace in the children's program room. In addition, by establishing a space for tinkering and creativity, we will be able to offer families and children a space for engagement and learning, Ms. Burke said. Each month, there will be a new challenge in the makerspace. Also, a collection of 10 STEM backpack kits will be created for circulation, and families will be able to check out a backpack with a microscope, a telescope, or an anatomy lab. These STEM kits will help parents create their own learning opportunities at home. The kickoff event for the grant project will be Saturday, January 6th at 2 p.m. at the library. During this event, Mad Science of Southern Massachusetts and Rhode Island will present a program entitled Fire and Ice. Children and families will be dazzled and entertained as they interact with a mad scientist. Foggy, dry ice storms, giant beach balls floating in the air, and even a special Mad Science burp potion will amaze children as they learn about the scientific method, air pressure, and the states of matter, Ms. Burke said. This family edutainment is for all ages, and no registration is required. DPW new boat fire engine on list of capital projects. The Mashpee Capital Improvement Committee, a team of financial advisors and town residents, will review a number of high-cost requests from the town department heads. Some of the bigger ticket items on this year's list include a storage garage for Department of Public Works equipment, a new boat for the Harbor Master's Office to patrol Mashpee-Wakeby Pond, and a new engine and ambulance for the Mashpee Fire Rescue. The Capital Improvement Committee reviewed requests this week and will likely make a recommendation to the May Town meeting next week. Department of Public Works Director Catherine E. Laurent requested $265,000 to replace a number of vehicles in the department's fleet, including a new wood chipper, a loader, a cat skid steer, and a van. Ms. Lorenz expects the loader to cost $210,000 and has requested a spending plan over 3 years. Mashpee Recreation Director Mary Kay Bradbury requested a 3-year funding source to purchase a new Americans with Disabilities Act compliant van, which will cost about $50,000. The current van is approaching 15 years old and is close to has close to 220,000 miles. The Mashpee Department of Natural Resources had requested a faster and bigger boat to patrol Mashpee-Wakeby instead of its current 17-foot Carolina skiff. Okay, I'm at the end of our hour. This has been Pat reading from the Friday, December 8th, 2017 edition of the Mashpee Enterprise. I'd like to remind you of our telephone number, 508-539-2030. Please call us with your comments, suggestions, and questions. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.